Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I'm Tim. Welcome to our podcast. And as we get closer to Halloween, the podcasts get creepier and creepier. Today we're going to do a story on Lizzie Borden. Of course, Lizzie was an American woman who back in 1892 was accused of killing and hacking to death her father and stepmother in Falls River, Massachusetts. She was eventually acquitted of that crime. That crime remains unresolved to this day. But we're going to talk about Lizzie and get into that crime and all those dastardly deeds. But before we do, let me introduce our panel. I'm joined by always by the very lovely, very talented, and very semi-intelligent Brandy. How are you today, Brandy?
Really? Semi-intelligent?
Well, semi means not quite all the way.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Quasi.
Quasi.
She's quasi-intelligent.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, she's not full-blown intelligent.
Right. That's why I was clarifying.
Yeah.
Okay. But how are you today, Brandy?
Well, yeah. I was better 30 seconds ago.
Are you excited to talk about this topic? Because crazy women, potential lesbians, they're kind of like your favorite topics.
What?
Okay, well...
You played softball?
Did you play college softball?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And could you swing a bat?
Yeah.
Okay,
so
we're going to give you...
lesbian swinging things.
It's right up your alley, girl. We're
going
to give you the benefit of the doubt and say that you were heterosexual.
She was a lesbian during college.
But let's say, were there lesbians on your team?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, it's a,
were they lipstick lesbians or the ugly kind?
How's Chuck? Let's talk about Chuck.
I want to know, did you take showers with these lesbians?
No.
And what did they look like?
Did you have pillow fights with the lesbians?
No.
Did they wear their little teddies?
Yeah.
No.
Come on, tell us some college stories.
Damn.
No.
We'll talk about this later.
You're not old enough to hear my college stories.
We'll get back to this.
Okay, and of course, also with us, a member of the very distinguished and honorable... debonair and all around.
Long-winded,
but very, very intelligent, Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
To me, I'm as fine as a hair on a frog's bottom.
You look like a frog's bottom.
And I see the devil already starting on me.
Yeah, lesbian anger.
It is. Come on, you people got your rights now. Come on.
Yeah, you can marry whoever you want.
You can marry whoever you want. You can vote now. You can own property.
You know I'm already married, right, to a dude.
But we let you we let you own property. We let you vote. We let you... And then, really, when we talk about... let's talk
your
about some great empires.
Your gums are still flapping.
I mean, the Roman Empire, how
flapping.
Did it fall?
They're
they started letting women
flapping.
Vote. They started letting women have property.
No, they fell because men ran the country.
No, I don't believe that was it.
Oh, I know you don't believe that.
It's as soon as they gave women the rights, that's when the Roman Empire fell.
Hmm. Well, Colonel, besides your concern on women's
suffrage. And I love women. I love women.
They love you, apparently.
Well, I love women.
You got women you know, come up to you all over the place and just want to kiss you right on the mouth.
Sometimes they do.
Yeah.
Dude, we just ate. Could we not?
Okay, Colonel. Any shout-outs, Colonel?
Well, you know, we got our regular shout-outs, and then we got a... Let's see who we got. We got... Now, Lady Beverly, we are working out right now to get you on Jack the Ripper, because this is going to be interesting. I think what we're going to do is Skype Lady Beverly in.
Lady Beverly in England.
In England. Lovely lady. I believe the Beatles did us a lovely lady. Beverly, where will we be without you? Right. Didn't they do that?
That was Ellen.
But anyway.
Really? Yeah. Rita Metermaid.
Okay, well, that was
right.
close.
So, yeah.
But anyway, lovely Beverly, we're gonna do the Skype, I believe.
Yes.
We're going to do the Skype, hook you up to a microphone, and hook you up.
We could do the Periscope.
Periscope, yeah.
Yeah.
We're
going to Skype. We'll do Skype.
So we're going to do Jack the Ripper. Are we going to try to do that before Halloween's over?
I don't know. We'll have to see what our schedule is like.
Okay.
Lady Beverly, thanks for listening. We also have Celine.
Celine, of course, we're doing... Now, Celine, you made us feel lazy, and we're doing more and more and more podcasts here just to try to get you...
We're just trying to keep her busy because she says she's ran through all of her podcasts. So we have to just... We're doing
podcasts
day and night just so we keep her entertained.
Yeah.
Celine's very active on her Facebook page, and thank you, Celine. And we're looking to start in a Facebook group. There's some interest in that, so we might be doing that real soon. Who else we got? Canute?
Oh, we love Canute and Storm.
Yeah, I mean, Norway.
Storm. Yeah, and the Colonel thinking about coming to Norway, Canute, if they will give me... Does Norway have an extradition treaty? I'm trying to find out with the United States. Canute, I just need a bond to stay in for maybe 2-3 weeks. Let's see. I got one of my boys in here this weekend.
Yeah.
Taylor. He's one of the twins. He's in here this weekend. It's always lovely to see the boys. And it's primarily because, you know, the boys are a pain in the ass. You know that. But it makes the mama happy. So, you know. I give a shout out to, and I'm gonna give a shout out to Taylor.
Is Taylor gonna move back to Cincinnati?
I'm hoping the boy does, but you know, he's up in Chicago and he's got the band and he's doing whatever. And Tanner called me yesterday. Listen, he said, you know, Dad, that and this is how far reaching we are, Timothy.
Mm-hmm.
He said,
all the way to Chicago.
He said, I wish you could have been up here. You guys would have, the History Dweebs would have done a podcast on this. I said, well, what was it? And he said, I just listened to two speakers. One was an American liberator of a concentration camp, and one was a survivor in that concentration camp. So he said it was just unbelievable. It was fascinating. He said that History Dweebs should do one on that. And I told him, you know what? Don't tell me what to do, boy. So all right. That's all I have for right now, Tim.
Okay. And so, good Lord. Shout out to my mom.
As always.
Shout out to Casey, who's not joining us, but will join us again soon. And Brittany, who knows where she's at. If anyone out of you would like a shout out, just reach out to us on Facebook or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll get a shout out next time. But anyway, this time, we're going to talk about Lizzie Borden. And, of course, most people are familiar with the song that children would sing about Lizzie Borden taking an axe and giving her mother 40 whacks. What's the rest, Brandy?
And when she'd seen what she had done, she gave her mother 41.
She gave her father. What the hell? Put the damn Candy Crush down. Get the poem right.
I don't have.
Yeah, so Lizzie Borden was... Lizzie Borden was accused in 1892 of the axe murders of her father and stepmother, Abby, in Falls River, Massachusetts, near Boston. The trial became a media circus, and reporters coming as far away as Europe to cover it. It was the trial of the century at that point.
This was the O.J. of the time.
The O.J. of its time, yeah. Now everything's a trial of the century. Every time there's a trial, it's a trial of the century. But this was truly a big deal back in the day because of the circumstances that we're going to get into in just a minute. But Lizzie was eventually found not guilty and was released from prison. And even though she was found not guilty by jury, she was ostracized the rest of her life by the community which she lived in. She stayed in the same community. But getting ahead of ourselves here, let's talk a little bit about Lizzie and her early life. Lizzie Borden's father's name was Andrew Jackson Borden. He grew up in a very modest surroundings and struggled financially as a young man. But he came he was descendant of some wealthy people in the Falls River area. There was apparently a good end of town, Falls Rivers, and a bad end of town. Wow. And there was a lot of, they had a lot of relatives live in the good end of town called the Hill. When I was, where the town I grew up in, it was very much like Cincinnati on the river, and the poor end of town was by the river. And as you got away from the river, you went up what we call the hilltop, and that's where the wealthy people live. So I'm getting the kind of same kind of vibe of this. Falls
so you
rivers.
Were at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah, I was not on the hilltop, that's for sure. And neither was Andrew and his family, although they could have afforded to live wealthy because he started out in his career, Andrew, as a... He made furniture and he made coffins. So, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, which probably...
That's a little creepy.
Well, yeah, it is a little creepy, but, you know, during the Civil War, he probably had some dough running.
Well, yeah.
Rolling in. But anyway, he became very successful at developing property. He owned several different textile mills. He was a banker, so he was a financier. He had his estimated value of his estate when he died in 1892, this murder, was at $300,000, which in today's dollars would be close to $8 million. But they lived pretty frugal. He was a bit of a miser, and that would come...
Is he a heat miser or a cold miser?
I don't know, but that it would come to be a... They would have run-ins over that, he and Lizzie. Lizzie's mom died when she was only 2 years old. She had two older sisters. One died in infancy, and her oldest sister, Emma, was 9 years older than Lizzie. But they lived, they didn't have indoor plumbing. They lived in the poor end of town. They didn't have indoor plumbing. They didn't have electricity. Electricity was available in most of the finer homes at the time. They were still using the kerosene lamps. The girls did all the chores. If they wanted to take a hot bath, they'd have to, you know, heat up water on the stove. So, I mean, they did not have... You know, even though he was wealthy, he was a bit of a thin spendthrift. And not, I don't know what I just said. Spendthrift.
But yeah, you know what? And this is the problem, Timmy. You get a couple extra dollars. The women always looking for things to ick them by.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, oh, yeah. Daddy's so tight, he won't let me take a hot bath out.
Well, he probably did take it too far, but they wanted to move, you know, they wanted to finer things in life. Lizzie and her sister, they wanted to move up to... The Hill, which with their wealthy...
The Hill?
With they their, wanted heels?
With their wealthy relatives. But, you know, Andrew would not. He came up kind of struggling coming up, so he did not want to spend money.
I don't blame him.
Like that. So, anyway, Lizzie Borden was born on July 19th, 1860. As I mentioned, she had one older sister who survived. Her name was Emma. She was 9 years older than Lizzie. And when Lizzie's mother died when she was 2 years old, Emma promised her mother that she would always take care of Lizzie, and which she did until later in her life.
When Lizzie killed her, too.
No, right. Lizzie did not kill her. But anyway, Lizzie and her older sister, Emma... they had a religious upbringing. They attended the Central Congregational Church in Falls Rivers. As a young woman, Lizzie was involved in activities related to the church, including teaching Sunday school and teaching recent English to recent immigrants to the U.S.
What?
Teaching English as a second language to recent immigrants to the U.S.
Is English your second language
English
for you?
English is his second language.
Oh, come on, give me a break. Okay, so she was involved in all these church activities, although she had a dark side. She was also a member of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, which, of course...
No, we don't like that.
She did not like to drink. And what do we say about that, Brandy?
Lips that touch drink will never touch mine.
Yeah. Yes, well, lips that touch wine will never touch mine.
I thought drink. I heard it. Lips that touch liquor will never touch mine, but whatever.
Whatever.
No, it's liquor in the front, poker in the rear, I believe is what it is.
So
liquor
anyway.
Beer, never fear.
Yeah.
She was ahead of the Timbers movement, but she also was a bit of a kleptomaniac.
There you go.
She was arrested for shoplifting. And it got to be, and because her dad would bail her out, it got to be a point where when she would go to the finer stores in town, they had a deal worked out where if Lizzie lifted something, the clerk would just write it down and they sent her dad a bill.
Put her on the tab.
Yeah, and her dad would pay it off.
So basically, every store loved to see Lizzie come and they put the expensive shit out when she came in.
Yeah, so she was.
Oh, Lizzie walked out with a diamond necklace.
So, yeah, she was a shoplifter. So
write that down.
Yeah, write that down. And now, Lizzie had some problems. When Lizzie was growing up, her dad remarried. This is, you know, this is 1892. He married Abby, and Abby was 30 when she married Andrew. Now, being 30 in 1892 and being single, you know, you were an old maid at that point.
Oh, hell yeah. You're an old maid
so
now,
Andrew
really?
Was doing her a favor.
Well, they both, I mean, it probably wasn't a relationship that was, you know, founded in love. It was he needed a mother for the two children, and she needed a husband because, you know, the clock was ticking. And so they got married, and they lived apparently a pretty decent life. You know, she moved in and took care of the girls. And from all accounts, the girls were very cordial to her, although...
Until they killed her.
Until they weren't.
Well, apparently, as the girls got older, and when this occurred, when this murder occurred, Lizzie was, 32. Lizzie was in that same spot where she was growing into, you know, becoming a spinster, and as was her sister, that neither one of them married. There were continued friction because Lizzie, of course, wanted... Lizzie and her sister wanted to the finer things in life, and the, you know, for if a young lady and 30 years old in 1892, if you weren't married, you were kind of expected to live at home. There wasn't a whole lot for you to do. Women didn't work that much; they didn't go to school. So,
well, they didn't have the hustler store back then, Demi.
Well, maybe perhaps
they had the carved own stuff.
They didn't have the Tinder.
They didn't have Tinder, no.
So anyway,
they didn't have Christian because she'd have been on ChristianLesbianMingle.com.
Well, because it doesn't appear that she had any.
Well, he wouldn't have paid for the internet.
Substantial relationships with men throughout her life that I could find. But anyway. So there was some tension between Libby and Abby. Another thing that occurred was that Andrew had bought a house for one of Abby's relatives. And I get, you know, shit really hit the fan when Lizzie and her sister found out about that.
Well, yeah.
So they got so pissed at it, he had to actually give them a rental home that he owned to Lizzie and her sister, and they sold it back to he sold it to them for $1, and then they turned around and sold it back to him for $5,000. So I don't know why he just didn't.
So he paid the girls off.
Yeah, but I don't know why he just didn't give her $5,000 and been done with it. But anyway, they went through that little charade, probably some tax purposes or something.
Why didn't she just steal the house? She stole everything else.
Well, so there was some tension in the home, right? So this relationship. It was growing more and more strained as time went on. Lizzie had some pigeons that she was she was caring for in the barn right before these attacks took place. And Andrew thought that these pigeons were attracting local children trespass onto his property and go into his barn. So he killed the pigeons with a hatchet.
Andrew was a pigeon killer?
He was. And, that, you know,
the kids Lizzie, were on his lawn.
Lizzie got pissed off because Lizzie loved animals. Now, we talk about serial killers and these bizarre murderers and things. And usually we always talk about how mean they were to animals, but Lizzie loved animals. And she, you know, she hit the roof when she found out her dad took an axe to her pigeons. I don't know how you take axe to a pigeon.
Again, the kids were on there.
You got to be pretty damn quick to take axe to a pigeon.
Well, no, I don't think he was just swinging through the air. He probably grabbed them and held them down. And
well, I guess by this time the pigeons were kind of docile.
You always got to worry about pigeons in the military. You know why? Because if you get pigeons in the military, there's liable to be a coup.
Oh, no.
For the love of God.
Oh,
we just lost 10 listeners, Timmy.
We just lost
now,
me.
Now, you know, here's what, you know what's just so far into the story what I'm having a hard time understanding?
What?
Lizzie, now, I've seen her. She was a handsome woman. Mm. Okay?
Well, you know, she wasn't as attractive as Elizabeth Montgomery, who played her in a TV movie in the 70s.
Now, I would have taken my chances with Elizabeth Montgomery in an axe, but she not a beautiful woman.
Well, but I mean, it's hard to
tell. She's a kleptomaniac.
Yeah, she is a kleptomaniac.
And she collects pigeons.
Yeah.
Yet she doesn't have a man. Imagine that.
Go tell.
Yeah, that's hard to figure
out. Sounds like somebody he would date.
Actually, it does, Timmy.
So
it's damaged. Daddy issues.
She didn't do heroin. that we know of. So anyway, so there was this tension in the home. Now, a couple weeks before these murders took place, the pigeon killing took place in May of 1892. In July of 1892, the sisters took a little vacation, but they came back and a week before the murders took place. Now, there was a break-in in the family home right before the murders took place, and someone stole $50 in cash and some of Abby's jewelry. But, you know, now the strange thing is that it was the dad, Andrew, reported the break-in or the robbery to the police, and they started an investigation. And then Andrew contacted police and said, oh, call it off.
Yeah, because he probably found out Lizzie stole stuff.
Well, I mean, that's the implication, right, that she was somewhat involved. So there's all this tension in the family. So the other thing that happened, oddly, right before the death, is everyone in the house, most people in the house, started getting sick. And Abby was concerned that someone was trying to poison them. Now, Andrew, being a banker and a businessman in this small town, he made some enemies along the way. And the night before the murders, a John V. Morse, who was Lizzie and Emmy's uncle, her mother's brother,
dead mother's brother.
Dead mother's brother, visited and was invited to stay a few days to discuss business matters with Andrew. But then apparently he left. So he was questioned after these murders occurred, but he was eventually ruled out as a suspect. So we got this housing situation where they were pissed off at their dad for giving Abby's relatives some of the property. We have the pigeon incident. We have the girls just upset because they're afraid that Abby is trying to is out to get their dad's money. Then we have this break-in, this peculiar break-in. We have the family becoming ill. Now, one of the things that was speculated was that they got some bad mutton. And that's what called
them. And, you know, ain't nothing worse than no bad mutton.
You don't, you
mutton
know, bad mutton.
Right,
nothing worse than bad mutton.
Not right here.
Not a fan of the mutton.
Lips that touch mutton shall never touch mine.
Mine either. But, of course, later on, then it was speculated that, you know, that this may have been an attempt to poison the family. So, we have the break-in. We have these everyone in the household getting violently ill, and we had this concern over the bad mutton. But bad mutton is a concern. Despite the fact that they were, Andrew was pretty frugal. They did have an ice box, so. This was in August too.
First beer.
It was very hot, so it may have been that they just had some spoiled food. But so we have all these things occurring, in the summer, late summer of 1892, which brings us up to the fateful day, and Brandy's going to tell us a little bit about that.
Abby and Andrew Borden were murdered in their home on the morning of Thursday, October 4th of 1892. Abby was killed between 9 a.m. and 10:30 a.m., and Andrew sometime between 10:30 and 11:10. Which, how they have such accuracy, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and how bad they screwed up this investigation, you'd wonder how they get this time thing down. But right. Go ahead.
Cleaning the guest room was usually one of Lizzie and Emma's regular chores, but John Morse had slept in the guest room the previous night, and so Abby had gone up to the room to make the bed. So according to the forensic investigation, Abby was facing her killer at the time of the attack. She was struck on the side of the head with a hatchet, which cut her just above the ear, causing her to turn and fall face down on the floor, which created contusions on her nose and forehead. So she fell face first on the floor. Her killer is then assumed to have sat on her back and delivered 19 direct hits to the back of her head.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that really kind of, we talked about this on other podcasts.
Overkill.
It's overkill. It's personal.
It's very angry.
Yeah.
So for Andrew, on Andrew's part, Abby didn't have a big day that day, evidently, aside from being hit 19 times.
Yeah, Andrew went to work, right?
It wasn't a great day for the woman.
Yeah. Andrew, after breakfast, Andrew and Morse went to the sitting room and chatted for a little while, and then Morse left to visit a relative around 8:45, and then Andrew left for his morning walk sometime around 9
a.m. His morning constitutional, he called it.
Okay. He then returned around 10:30, but his key failed to open the door, so he knocked for attention. Bridget went to unlock the door.
Yeah, and I didn't introduce her. Bridget was the maid, the Irish maid that worked for the family.
This is important,
family.
Too.
Yeah.
People pay attention.
Yeah, Bridget was played an important role here and would later testify on behalf of Lizzie. But she was a young maid that worked in the Borden's residence.
So Bridget went to go unlock the door, but found that it was jammed, and she started just cussing at it. She later testified that she heard Lizzie laughing immediately after this, but she didn't see her. She stated that the laughter was coming from the top of the stairs.
And that's, of course, where the murder was taking place.
This was later considered significant because Abby's body was visible through the gap between the bed and the floor when climbing the stairs, only becoming hidden by the bed upon reaching the top of the stairs. Lizzie later denied being upstairs and testified that her father had asked her where Abby was, and she had replied that a messenger had delivered a summons to visit a sick friend.
Yeah, and this is a strange part, too. Dad comes home and says, where's Abby? She says, oh, she went to visit a sick friend. They never did find a sick friend. They never did find a messenger. I mean,
right.
All this is just out of thin air.
Andrew comes home, and Lizzie, being the dutiful daughter that she is, took Andrew's boots off and helped him into his slippers before he laid down on the sofa for a quick little cat nap.
What an angel.
Right. Then she told Bridget that there was a department store sale. There's a big sale at Macy's.
Big sale at Macy's.
Yeah. Midnight Madness.
And told her she could go. But Bridget didn't feel
good.
But
Lizzie had a different view of sales.
Well, that's true.
Because when Lizzie go into Kohl's, she had 100%. She had as many Kohl dollars as she wanted.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Bridget had a lot of discretionary funds around and working as a maid.
For this guy.
This type bastard.
Yeah, but Bridget didn't feel good, and she went to take a nap in her bedroom instead. So Lizzie gave two different accounts of what happened next. Originally, she stated that she went to the barn to look for an iron or a tin to fix the door that was jammed, because she was handy that way. And she remained in the loft for 20 to 30 minutes eating pears.
Well, there's not probably a summer days go by that I don't sit out in the loft and eat pears.
For a half hour?
Maybe 15 minutes.
I mean, my God.
A lot of pears, you can down a lot of pears.
Were they Asian pears? Because Asian pears, you ever seen those things?
They're big.
Yes. And I don't get that because the Asian people are small.
Wow.
How come the Asian people are big?
Police were skeptical of that, finding it unlikely that anyone could stand the stifling heat of that loft for that long.
Yeah.
And they also reported finding no footprints in the dust. So Bridget testified that she was in her third floor room resting from cleaning the windows because that's what you do after you clean the windows.
Well, I'm sure she worked pretty hard. She was a maid.
She's pretty damn mad. Well, first of all,
okay.
She was Irish.
Okay, so
yeah, let's
just before she was resting from cleaning the windows, when just before 11:10, she heard Lizzie call from downstairs. Maggie, come quick. Father's dead. Somebody came in and killed him.
Bastards.
Some bitches come in and kill Papa.
Lizzie always called Bridget Maggie. It was the name of an earlier maid, so I don't know if she just...
What a snobby bitch.
Yeah, we're just going to have one name.
You Irish
you look
all,
like a
you
Maggie.
You Irish people all look alike. Yeah. I'm just Maggie.
You look like a Maggie, so that's what we're going with. Andrew was slumped on the couch in the downstairs sitting room, struck 10 or 11 times with a hatchet-like weapon. One of his eyeballs had... been split cleanly in two, suggesting that he'd been asleep when he was attacked.
Yeah, it looked like from... I've seen some photos of this. He was laying right next to a sofa, so it looks like he was sleeping on a sofa. Whoever came up behind him and just... Yeah. He was dead, probably dead to first...
First hit.
Yeah, first whack.
And he was still bleeding, so it suggested a very, very recent attack.
Yeah, and there was like 2 hours between... Between Abby being murdered, because her blood had already dried.
Right.
And this attack.
So children who learn the chant may believe it took 40 blows to kill Abby Borden and it took 41 to kill Andrew, and that's not really true. The coroner did confirm that Abby was killed first, but by 19 blows, not the 40 that was popularized, and Andrew received even fewer wounds. But the 10 or 11 blows that he got were pretty gruesome and focused mainly on his head and had destroyed most of his face.
So, again, it's personal.
It's personal. And you know what police say are the most violent of crimes? Those personal is when...
Crimes of passion.
Well, and when there's gay people involved.
So God. Lizzie,
no, it's true.
Lizzie answers
the
police questions.
The gay people have the worst kind of murders, man.
Were at
they're
the
gruesome.
Time, her we're answers to police
answer
questions
listeners after this.
Were strange and contradictory. Initially, she reported hearing a groan or a scraping noise or a distress call before entering the house from, you know, eating her pears or whatever the hell she was doing. But 2 hours later, she said she heard nothing and entered the house without realizing anything was wrong. When asked where her stepmother was, she recounted that Abby was receiving a note asking her to visit a sick friend. She also stated she thought Abby had returned and asked if someone could go upstairs and look for her. I don't know what that means.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't make any sense.
No, I know. Lizzie can't keep track of herself.
Right. She can't. She didn't have a really well thought out plan.
Bridget and a neighbor, Mrs. Churchill, were halfway up the stairs, their eyes level to the floor when they looked into the guest room and saw Abby laying on the floor. Most of the officers who interviewed Lizzie reported that they disliked her attitude. She was an asshole. And some say she was too calm and poised.
See, but that's the part I don't like that kind of testimony because, people react differently to things.
They do. Yeah. I mean, because you have, and as many of our listeners know, the Colonel Mama died a few years back.
Jesus and, God.
What did she die of?
Oh,
my mama had the cancer.
Jesus.
She had the cancer.
Oh, my God.
And the Colonel, you know, the missus was 8 months pregnant, and she was having Logan, and she was hysterical. My wife was very close to my mama. Mm-hmm. My mama loved Renee. And my two sisters was hysterical. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the colonel, he didn't cry at the funeral. Colonel had to be a pallbearer. Colonel didn't cry. Now people gonna say, "Oh, the colonel killed his mama because he didn't cry at the funeral."
Yes, I think you kill most people that you come in contact with, piece by piece and little by little. I think that's what happens.
But do you see my
piece
point?
Piece by piece, you tear my heart out.
Do you see my point?
Where's that from?
I don't know, but London Theatre Company right there. That's what that is. Good for you.
You know what?
Nope, I'm finishing this, and then you can yammer on your...
No, you're supposed to...
Your inane bullshit here in a minute.
But, no, I just wanted to throw one real quick thing. Because Timmy got into here, and we couldn't even do shout-outs, but Miss Beverly, after our Edgar Allan Poe thing, Miss Beverly was walking her dog.
Yeah.
I already heard the story.
But our listeners haven't, so...
And they don't care because
me.
I want to read this. This is where we are here.
Okay, I'll wait till
it's
we get to my
turn.
Part.
Wait till never.
Okay, you got the talking stick.
I do have the talking stick.
Did you?
I'm going to beat you over the head with
Lizzie. Let's get back to Lizzie.
Despite Lizzie's attitude.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
And her changing alibis, nobody bothered to check her for bloodstains.
Yeah, I've read some accounts where she may have been naked.
So she looks like Carrie after the prom, and nobody's bothering.
No. They didn't see it, but...
They didn't have the CSI back then.
But she was... Well, you'll get to this. Go ahead.
They searched her room, but it was kind of a cursory inspection. And at trial, they admitted they didn't do a proper search because Lizzie wasn't feeling well. She had the vapors.
Well, the thing was, too, back in the day, it wasn't, you know, there was this, you know, it was this Puritan kind of kind of thinking. And, you know, you don't ask to go in to look at a woman's clothes and her.
And plus, she could have been on her menstrual cycle.
Well, I've seen some reports where they say.
But back then they didn't have the feminine hygiene products they had now. So when women
she got menstrual blood, like, in her hair or up on her
sleeve?
Well, yeah,
it was messy back then.
She had no, there was no blood.
It was on the walls and everything when women used to get to...
So she searched her room, they searched her room, but she wasn't feeling very well, and they were criticized eventually.
Her stepmother and her father was just axed to death, so maybe she was feeling a little...
She needs to quit being a baby. They were subsequently criticized for their lack of diligence. In the basement, police found two hatchets, two axes, and a hatchet head with a broken handle, because hitting somebody that hard in the skull will break the handle. It ain't easy. The hatchet head was suspected of being the murder weapon, as the handle looked like a fresh break, and the ash and dust on the head, unlike the other bladed tools, appeared to have been deliberately applied to make it look like it had been been in the basement for some time. But nobody took the tools from the house. They just left them there.
Well... Don't want to be rude.
Huh, look at that. Nothing. The sister's friend, Allison Russell, decided to stay with them while John Morse spent the night in the attic guest room, contrary to later accounts that he slept in the murder site guest room.
Man, would you stay in that house that night?
No, I would have.
I would have went to Motel 6
They had pears.
Good point.
That's true. Evidently, they had some friggin' awesome pears. Police were stationed around the house, and later that night, an officer saw Lizzie enter the basement, bend over the pails containing her parents' bloody clothing, and that was never explained. She never explained why she did that. Why aren't we explaining why their bloody clothing is in a pail in the basement?
Well, you have to do something with them.
Let's explain that. You don't keep it there. Yeah, the following night, Morse left the house, and he was...
Call Goodwill and pick it up?
No, shouldn't they be... Process through the CSI?
I don't think they had CSI back then.
The following night, Morse left the house and was swarmed by hundreds of people. Police had to escort him back into the house. On August 6th, police conducted a more thorough search of the house, inspecting the sister's clothing and confiscating the broken-handled hatchet head. That evening, a police officer and the mayor visited the Bordens, and Lizzie was informed that she was a suspect in the murders. The next morning, Allison Russell entered the kitchen to find Lizzie Borden burning a dress on the fire. Lizzie explained that she was burning it because it was covered in paint, but it was never determined whether it was the dress she'd been wearing on the day of the murders.
I've heard, I've read some parts where they suspect, and I think maybe the colonel gets into this, that they think she might have done it naked. She was naked.
Naked?
Naked.
Well, if you're going to chop somebody up with a hatchet, the way to do it is naked.
Yeah.
Because then you don't get your clothes all bloody, all sweaty, all...
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of theories on this thing, and it starts out with the initial investigation.
Yeah, the inquest.
The inquest, yeah. And originally, they were looking outside of the immediate family. You had some local businessmen, because he did business with a lot of people. He wasn't the most scrupulous of businessmen. You had neighbors, and of course... Anytime you got an Irish person living in your house, God. You got to look at
them. What is wrong with you?
Well, no, they had an Irish person and an axe. I mean...
She was the maid.
Keep going.
Okay, Bridget
Leave
Sullivan.
Bridget alone.
But what I'm saying is, you can say what you want. I grew up with these people. You can't have axes around.
They're Irish, I know.
All they had to say was, Bridget, look at you. You missed a spot up on the second floor window. I got to go back to the window. You want me to go back to the window? Hey, here's something for
it's
you.
It's the worst Irish accent I've
it's
ever
heard. It's really
bad. Where's the colonel from the
South? I wonder if she was short.
Yeah,
she was.
I wonder if she knew Typhoid Mary.
I don't know.
But
I was wondering if Bridget was short.
So it's possible that they...
As in Bridget the Midget?
That's it.
You don't tell people
no,
that...
No, she was normal size. I saw a picture of her.
You don't tell people... You don't tell Irish people that they done the job wrong.
Okay, please continue.
So the police start to realize that Lizzie, or as some people call her, Lizzie, had a lot to gain by her father's death. You know, his tight-fistedness and his meanness and everything else, they thought, well, maybe it just ate. And you remember, these women are in their 30s. So now, you know, that's back when 30 was the new 60.
Yeah.
You know, these women had started to make the change.
Yeah, they were spinsters. I mean, Emma was 9 years older than that. So
yeah,
I think Lizzie was 32. She was 41. So
now Lizzie in particular, she often exhibited signs of mental instability, but they're not sure if that was the PMS.
What?
Or
we should point out, just for the listener's sake, that Emma was visiting relatives when all
this occurred. Emma had an ironclad alibi.
Yeah.
So anyway, Lizzie had shown some signs of craziness that go beyond the PMS. I mean, it was stuff that even chocolate couldn't soothe. So she was just kind of crazy. So anyway, they have an inquest.
Mm-hmm.
August 8th, Lizzie appears. She requests to have her attorney present, and that request is refused.
Denied.
Yeah. Says it's in that at that time an inquest could be held in private. So now she'd also been prescribed regular doses of morphine to calm her nerves, and as you know,
that's what I need to calm my nerves.
Yes, the morphine will calm your nerves quite a bit. So her behavior during this inquest was pretty weird. She refused to answer a question, even if the answer would be beneficial to her.
Yeah, so they think she may have been impacted by this. Infected by this medication issue.
Yeah.
Infected?
Whatever.
No, she was just enjoying her high and did not want to. And she bothered.
She did fucking cops her buzz kill.
She did not want her bliss
buzz.
Why are you harshing my buzz, dude? So anyway, her behavior was pretty damn erratic, and she contradicted herself. She claimed to have been in the kitchen reading a magazine. Magazine wasn't even invented back in those days.
They were too. Home and garden.
When her father arrived home. And then she claimed to have been in the dining room doing some ironing, and everybody knows that they made the Irish woman do all the ironing. So Lizzie didn't even know how to operate the iron.
No,
they didn't have electricity
in
the house.
I wish somebody hit me with an axe right now.
Come on. Lizzie worked hard around the house.
And then she claimed to have been coming down the stairs. Mm-hmm. So now, and she claimed to have removed her father's boots and put his slippers on, despite police photographs showing that he had his boots on.
Yeah.
So she gave a bunch of contradictory questions. She did burn a dress that she said had been stained doing housework. Now, again, everybody knows you give the stain hand-me-downs to the Irish woman in the house.
Now, Emma, on her behalf, Emma did say that there was a dress that was stained with paint, and she suggested that she destroy it.
Yeah, red paint?
I'm just saying, Emma had testified in her
And
behalf.
When we do, and listeners, you can't see us, but when I say it was stained with paint, I'm using air quotes with the paint. So anyway, the district attorney, he's a very aggressive, he was much like the devil over here, aggressive and confrontational. Mm-hmm. So August 11th, Lizzie is served a warrant of her arrest in jail. Now, the inquest testimony on this, the basis for the modern debate regarding her guilt or innocence, was later ruled inadmissible at a trial in June of 1983 because the guy at the inquest acted such a fool.
Right.
So a grand jury began hearing evidence on November 7th, and Lizzie was indicted on December 2nd. The trial takes place in New Bedford in the following June. Prosecutor attorney, you had Hosea M. Knowlton, and future Supreme Court Justice William H. Moody.
She
brought in some big-ass defenders. Yeah. She had Andrew Jennings, Melvin Adams, and former governor, Massachusetts Governor George D. Robinson. Now, in this trial, you know, they compare, but it was compared to the Bruno Hauptmann trial, the Ethel and Julius Rosenberg trial, the O.J. trial.
It was compared to the O.J. trial.
Well, it's
No,
it's
I mean, years later, the trial's been, you know, in that scope.
As a cluster?
Yeah.
Circus, media attention.
And there's some, you know, there's some of the big points that they tried to make in the thing, really, and there's a lot of them. That the prosecutor put forth. Now, these things shocked the community, but a lot of people in Fall River were not that surprised that he got killed. He was worth, like you said, almost $10 million in today's money. He's one of the wealthiest, and everybody thought he was just a jackass.
And remember, they lived in the not-so-nice area of town, despite being wealthy.
They didn't have no security systems.
No, they lived in a pretty rough area of town.
Their guard pigeons, Andrew killed them all. So, I mean, they were just left vulnerable.
Yeah.
So, you know, he made a lot of enemies on his way to the top, and rumors swirled that Andrew and Abby had perhaps been killed as revenge for Andrew's shady business dealings. All right, so that's one of the points that, you know, they tried to make. Some of them for the defense, some of them for the prosecution. Despite the beliefs in Lizzie's guilt, investigators faced an uphill battle trying to convict this woman. There's no physical evidence linking her to the murder because she burned the dress and the hatchet had been broken up. They didn't discover any blood on the hatchet. And again, we go back to remember the New Orleans murders?
Yeah.
People always had damn hatchets in the house. People always getting killed with the hatchets.
Well, and the thing, too, is all the evidence was circumstantial. They had no witnesses. They had no physical evidence. It was all circumstantial based upon she had a motive and she had
They did have fingerprint testing back in that time, but they didn't use it in this
time. They didn't do it.
So that kind of screwed the pooch there. They did, however, establish that Lizzie had tried to buy prussic acid, which is, you know, and the devil puts in a lot in a meatloaf. Mm-hmm. It's a highly poisonous liquid.
Mm. Yeah, she tried to buy that shortly before the murders occurred.
Well, she actually did buy it.
I'm
sorry, she was unsuccessful in that attempt, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the hatchet found in the basement was not convincingly shown to be the murder weapon. Prosecutors argued that the killer had removed its handle because it was bloody. Well, it'd be easier to clean the thing off than to remove the handle at that point. They didn't have the...
And like you said, hatchets were pretty common to be found around the house.
And then one officer said a hatchet handle was found near the hatchet head, and another officer said, no, that's not true. Another thing, they didn't find any bloody clothing, but a few days after the thing, Lizzie burns her dress. Okay, now you got the gruesome nature of the crimes combined with the wealth of this family. It was just irresistible to the newspapers.
Yeah, and I think probably a large part of it too. Probably a large part it played in her her being found not guilty is, you know, the role of women at that time. I mean, it was just hard for people to believe that a woman would do that.
A woman would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they clearly hadn't met the devil.
Yeah.
Now, by the time the trial began in 1893, Lizzie become a media sensation. I mean, she'd been on the Maury Show. She'd been on Oprah.
I think she was arrested and locked up before the trial started.
Maury.
No, mm-hmm. She couldn't get bail. She was locked up.
Yeah, they did the DNA test on the hatchet.
Okay.
Lizzie, the hatchet. You are not the mother of the hatchet.
Okay. Go
so
ahead.
Anyway,
go on.
So the circus itself, just like the O.J. thing, it took on a circus-like atmosphere. And the prosecution didn't have a lot of forensic evidence, so they surmised that she had perhaps committed the crime while, as the devil's clan calls it, your religion, she committed the murders skyclad, which is, for normal people, naked, Timmy.
Ah.
When the devil has her ceremonies at midnight, mm-hmm. they runs around naked.
Now, they bring in a couple of interesting pieces of evidence to the courtroom.
Yeah, but there's still some more interesting points here. There's some testimony that the maid Bridget went upstairs around 11 o'clock and left Lizzie and her father downstairs. They know that for sure. Lizzie told a lot of people that at that time she was at the barn and not in the house. And she was at the barn for at least a half an hour. So eating her pears. So who are you going to believe, the Irish maid or the axe murderer? It's tough. It's a tough one. Now, you got Simon Rubinsky. He testified on Lizzie's behalf that he saw Lizzie leaving the barn at 11:03. Now, that doesn't really make much sense because they lived, because they live far from that. Why is this guy, peeping on Lizzie? What's he doing?
Continue.
Now, Charles Gardner confirmed the time. He said at 11:10, Lizzie called the maid downstairs, told her Mr. Borden had been murdered, told her not to go into the room where he died. Instead, Lizzie sent the maid to fetch a doctor. The axe. Now, here's one thing. There was a similar axe murder nearby shortly before the trial. So this could have been an axe murder we don't know about.
Right. There were another incident nearby.
Yeah, and the perpetrator was shown to have been out of the country when the Bordens were killed. So it's,
Yeah.
Now, evidence was excluded that Lizzie sought to have they excluded the evidence that she tried to buy that prussic acid. She said it was for cleaning a sealskin cloak, and a local druggist said that would be true.
Well, that's what I use on my sealskin cloak. I don't know about you, Brandy, but that's what I use.
You know what it does not work well on, Timmy?
What?
Sheepskin condoms.
Continue.
Don't try to clean a sheepskin condom with prussic acid because it'll hold.
Especially if you're wearing it.
When you're wearing it, yeah. Yeah, it's worse. Oh, my Lord, sweet Jesus. But anyway, because of the mysterious illness that struck the household before the murders, the bad mutton.
Nothing worse than bad mutton.
The family's milk and Andrew and Abby's stomachs contents were removed during the autopsy. They were tested for poison. No poison was found. The victims' heads, what remained of them, was removed during the autopsy. Skulls were used as evidence during the trial. And Lizzie got a terrible case of the vapors and just fell out when she saw
that. Yeah, they bring her dad's skull and her stepmother's skull into the courtroom.
Well, it's unnerving.
it would be unnerving.
About once every 2 weeks, the devil come in here carrying somebody's skull by the hair, and it's like, devil, could you put it in a bag?
She fainted.
I have to send a message.
Yeah, so she fainted, and
what they tried to do was show that the axe wounds lined up with
it was like a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah,
but they didn't line up all that well. And then they buried the heads at the foot of each grave instead of the head of the grave. That was like some kind of sick joke they played. But anyway, the presiding judge, Justin Dewey, he'd been appointed by Robinson when he was a governor, delivered a lengthy summary that supported the defense as his charge to the jury before it was sent to deliberate. So he was really on the side of the justice. He was really on the side of the defense.
Yeah,
he'd been appointed by Lizzie's defense attorney.
Yeah, there were some connections there. And I've read where legal scholars have looked at that and said it would have been, after he gave the jury their instructions, it would have been almost impossible for them to come back with a guilty verdict.
Mm-hmm. They deliberated just an hour and a half. They deliberated long, like most juries. They got their lunch ticket.
They said that jurors said that they had decided after 10 minutes, but they sat there for an hour and a half. Because they didn't want people.
They wanted people to think that they had actually deliberated this. Mm-hmm. But they were like, "Nah, she didn't do it. She wasn't there." But most people, again, this comes back to the fact that she really was a woman. And they thought, no, women were the genteel.
Yeah, and this was back in the Victorian era. And it was probably thought that, you know, a woman wouldn't do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the evidence was pretty circumstantial.
Yeah.
But, when you know, if you look at this, I mean, you know, objectively, you have to think that she got away with it. But anyway, after the trial,
let's see. Well, although acquitted at trial, there's a bunch of other theories that happened. A bunch of other theories that people came up
with. Okay, what were they? What were some of them?
Well, why don't you tell us?
I want to hear you say it. I want your version of it. So, what were some of the theories?
Some of the theories were that Lizzie was a main suspect.
Yeah, that's the one I'm going with.
You're going with Lizzie?
Yeah. Brandy?
One theory suggests that Lizzie was physically and sexually abused by her father.
Yeah, and it just wasn't talked about. So that there was some real sexual abuse going on. But there was never no evidence of that, were they?
No.
No.
Bridget Sullivan, while recovering from the mystery illness that struck the household, alleged gave a deathbed confession to her sister, stating that she had changed her testimony on the stand in order to protect Lizzie.
Yeah, there's some speculation.
That's another one of those deathbed things.
Yeah, and whether they should carry more weight. But after this trial was over, Bridget goes, she leaves the household, she goes work somewhere else, and eventually she dies. As the colonel said, as she's on her deathbed, she tells her sister that she was covering up for Lizzie. And one of the theories is that Lizzie and Bridget had a thing going on.
Yeah, that was a twisted
thing. Yeah, that they had an affair going on, and that Abby or Andrew found out about it and, were going to put an end to it. And that might have, you know, sparked the rage in Lizzie, and Bridget was just covering up for her. But all right, any more theories?
Well, one is that Emma snuck back and did it.
Yeah, Emma was out of town, though.
Some believe that she had time to get back in town, do it, because nobody saw her out of town that much. The other one was John Morse, Lizzie's maternal uncle. He rarely met with the family after his sister died, but came to stay with them the night before the murders. He was considered a suspect.
I read where he had people had saw him on the streetcars. He knew the streetcars he was taking.
Yeah.
And people had saw him there at 11 o'clock when the murders were supposed to have taken place. So it sounded like he had alibis to me. It sounded like he had a pretty good alibi. And I guess somebody stranger coming in a house is another theory.
Yeah, and the other theory is that Lizzie caught, or Mrs. Borden caught Lizzie and the maid Bridget together.
Yeah, they were in a tryst.
And she reacted with just horror and disgust. And Lizzie killed Mrs. Borden with a candlestick. And the butcher and the baker and the candlestick maker.
Oh,
so, okay. So those are some of the other theories. And Lizzie, clearly, I mean, she wasn't married by the time she was 24, so I'd say it's pretty certain she was a lesbian.
There's some other stuff that happens later on that kind of confirms that.
Yeah.
So after the trial, Lizzie is released, and she and her sister move into a big modern house in the neighborhood. Guess what neighborhood they move into?
Up on the hill.
On the hill, yes, in Fall River. They move into the expensive neighborhood. Lizzie goes back to her same church that she normally goes to a week after the trial ended, but received a kind of cold shoulder from the congregation, so she stopped going there. She started going by the name of Elizabeth Borden instead of Lizzie. So her and her sister move into a nice new house. They get a new maid. They get a housekeeper, a coachman. So they start spending some of Papa's dough. Now, what is interesting here, Colonel, being a legal scholar that you are,
yes, ma'am,
you're going to appreciate this.
I will.
Now, because it was, now, had Andrew been murdered first, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Abby would have had dowry rights to his possessions.
Exactly.
His estate.
Mm-hmm.
Then when she was killed, her family
would have got the money.
She would have got the dowry rights to the estate.
So and this is very important in order that people get killed.
It is. But because Abby was killed first, then Andrew was, in fact, had dowry rights for whatever property that Abby owned, mostly his, if she didn't have anything. And then when he was killed, then the daughters became, the estate went to the daughters. So it's kind of interesting how that worked. I don't know if Lizzie planned that or not, but it could have went the other way. Had her dad been murdered first, Abby would have, at that point, been...
That would have been a great irony.
Yeah, yeah. She would have had, at least 50% of the estate, I guess.
She'd have been a broke lesbian.
Yeah. But anyway, despite the acquittal, as I said, Lizzie was kind of ostracized by the Fall River Society. So even though she moved in a big house on the hill, was not well-received by her neighbors. She tried to stay out of the public eye, but she got back in the public eye in 1897 when she did what, Brandy? What do you think she did?
Became a lesbian.
She shoplifted again.
Oh.
But those charges were eventually dropped. So
yeah, Daddy wasn't there to bail her out.
Yeah, she could bail herself out. Now, 1905, her and her sister Emma had an argument because Lizzie kept giving these big parties for an actress named Nance O'Neill. And it's believed that Lizzie and Nance had a relationship, not inappropriate, but they had a relationship that Emma did not approve of. So again, it appears that Lizzie had these flings with women. Emma really got upset, and she moved out of the house, and the sisters never saw each other again. In 1927, on June the 1st, 1927, Lizzie went to have her gallbladder removed, and she ended up dying of pneumonia. Funeral details were not published, and very few people attended the funeral. Only 9 days later, even though they hadn't seen or talked to each other in years, only 9 days later, Emma passed away at age 76 in New Hampshire. So, interesting enough, they had died just 9 days apart. Now, Lizzie left $30,000 to the Fall River Animal Rescue League. Remember I said she loved animals. And she left $500, or $30,000 that she left would be equivalent to $546,000 today. And she left $500 for the perpetual care of her father's grave, which would be $9,000 in today's money.
Ain't a lot. That's like three trips to the cemetery.
Well, you know, back in the day, it was probably a lot. But anyway, that's, that's the legacy of Lizzie Borden. More than a century has passed since the murders. And no one else was ever charged with the murders, and the mystery remains officially. The case is still unresolved, although I think, as we said, we're pretty, I mean, at least Brandy, and I don't know about you, Colonel, what's your thoughts on who?
I think the Irish woman did it.
Poor maid. Hmm? Okay.
Shit, minding her business.
Minding her own damn business. Washing the damn windows.
Well, she was trying to wash the windows. Using it. And they was telling her, no, you missed a spot here, you missed a spot there. She had to keep climbing on the ladder.
Called her Maggie.
Hot and sweaty. Kept calling her Maggie.
Never did get her name right.
So anyway, Lizzie, actually, in a few years ago, they refurbished the home in which the murders took place and is now the Lizzie Borden bed and breakfast.
It's a bed and breakfast. You can stay there.
You can actually stay there. You can actually stay and sleep in the room in which Abby was murdered. Now, the father was murdered in the parlor. But you can sleep in the bedroom that Abby was murdered in. And if you want to stay on the night that it occurred, you know, on the night that it occurred on August 4th, you have to make reservations years in advance because it's so popular. People want to stay there that night. So if you're near Falls River, Massachusetts,
even though it occurred during the daytime,
it did occur. It occurred at 11 in the morning, but they get a lot of people. You can go there and just take a tour, but if you want to stay all night, you can do that as well. And they serve little Axe cookies.
Yeah.
Of course they do.
No, they really do. I watched it on, I seen it on YouTube. So, you know, if you see it on the YouTube, it has to be true.
Well, it's hard to make, you know what's hard to make? Axe muffins.
It is, or mutton.
Axe mutton chops. Mm-hmm. Shaped like axes.
Mm-hmm. So, Brandy, any final thoughts on Lizzie Borden?
No. Nope. Sounds like a bitch.
What does ye say?
She did it.
Yeah, guilty. Colonel, you think it was Maggie?
I believe that hell hath no fury like a lesbian scorn, and I believe that Bridget and Lizzie were lesbians.
I like lesbians.
I don't have anything against lesbians at all. Not a thing. But I believe that old lady walked in on the unholy tryst, mm-hmm. and somebody whacked her with a candlestick.
So you think Lizzie was dining at the Y?
I believe she was. that's just a crude thing to say.
Okay, any final thoughts, Colonel? I know you've got all kind of thoughts, and most of them are incoherent. But
no, this one's pretty cut and dry. The Irish woman did it.
Okay, what is your thing? Now, you were going to tell us something about your email from Beverly.
God.
Oh, yeah, my email from Beverly.
Why?
Apparently, the British theater had heard my rendition of The Raven.
Well, tell the story. Go ahead and tell the story.
No!
The devil was doing her part of the podcast, but as you know, Timmy, she can get a little dry and dull at times.
Yeah.
And then she can just lose away and not even know what the hell she's talking about.
Yeah, like during the Pope podcast.
And I had to spice her part up a bit by doing part of The Raven.
That's when Brandy stormed out of the room.
Yeah, she stormed out of the room, and for some reason we called her. Why did we call her back?
I don't know. But go ahead, continue.
You were quoting
Edgar Allan
Poe. We needed somebody to get a soda from the machine.
Right.
So we called Brandy back. So anyway... Now, Lady Beverly, she walked on her dog with a friend, and she's like, oh, I listen to these people all the time. You got to listen. And this man from the British Royal Theater heard my rendition of Poe and said...
He was impressed.
Lady Beverly, that is my next King Lear.
Yeah.
How do you think he would look in tights? Well, of course, you know, Timmy, tights is playing to my strength. So...
I've always said that.
And as Lady Beverly said, you two will be riding my coattails. See me in the play, and I get you tickets. I might.
Is this going to be at an amphitheater? Because I really like to go to an amphitheater.
Yeah,
those are delightful.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we have fruit to throw.
So I'll be the next
cabbage.
Yeah. I'm going to be the next Olivier.
I would like to throw fruit.
I'll be the next Olivier. So.
Olivier de Havilland.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you know, and the Colonel Method Actor.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. You're just like Brando.
Brando, yeah. Pacino, yeah. We all, De Niro.
You're going to have to go over there and like live. You're really going to have to live like King Lear for a while.
For a couple months.
Yeah, we're going to see you in tights quite a bit.
You know what? Yeah. You should leave to do that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to find somebody. Lady Beverly's going to hook me up with a castle. So
Sure. She's, yeah.
I'm going to need a chamber pot and chambermaid and whatnot.
Okay, Colonel, while you're preparing for that role, where can people find us?
Well, right now, people can find us on the second floor.
No, where can they find the podcast?
Well, if they look hard enough, they can find us on the Facebook.
Facebook, yeah.
We have History Dweebs.
Yeah, find us there. We have 4,000 followers on History Dweebs.
Yeah, strangely. We got, you can get us on iTunes is the best place. Leave us a review. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, that helps people find us.
You can get us on Stitcher.
Mm-hmm.
I believe on Tuesday we'll be on Entertainment Tonight.
We'll be on Netflix.
Thursday we'll be doing Zany's Comedy Club.
That's not true at all.
In Des Moines, Illinois. Or Des Moines, is it Illinois? Yeah. I don't know.
Iowa.
Iowa.
Yeah. No, we're not going to be there. Mm-hmm. No, but they can't find us on. They can find us on Facebook. They can find us on iTunes. They can find us on Stitcher. Join us on Facebook, and we got a lot of cool stuff up there. Brandy, any final thoughts?
No. This has gone on long enough.
Colonel, any final thoughts for you?
I believe that I have made all my thoughts clear on this. Never give a lesbian a
Every thought he's ever had.
Okay, everyone, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on History Dweebs.
Good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.